Welcome to The Scrub Life, a podcast for and about the incredible profession of surgical technology. I'm Chris Blevins, and our mission at The Scrub Life is to educate the public about surgical technology. Each episode dives into the wonderful world of surgery, where we inform and hopefully entertain our listeners while interviewing amazing individuals within the field and presenting the hot topics everyone wants to know more about. Certified surgical technologists are an integral part of the sterile team that cares for patients in the operating room. Learn more about this exciting field, the immense effort that goes into educating future CSTs, and how you too can become a ninja of the OR. Now, without further ado, here's the latest episode of The Scrub Life. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Scrub Life podcast. Today's is going to be fun for so many reasons. First of all, reason number one is guess who I have with me today? My partner in podcast crime. What's up, Stephanie?
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
I'm glad you're here to witness what's about to happen.
Yeah, this is going to be entertaining to say the least.
It is. And so before we get started, I want to be able to kind of give some, give the reason why we even did this episode in the first place. And that was because of you all, the listeners, who we are so grateful to have. But if you recall, if you go to our website, thescrublifepodcast.com, there is a virtual suggestion box. It's a link that sends you to a survey where our listeners can participate in the podcast. And so we had somebody do just that, didn't we, Steph?
Yes.
Yeah. And so one of the things that was suggested was, hey, we'd love an episode where we talk about ways that we can stay safe, because surgery happens 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It doesn't matter.
It's not always scheduled.
Exactly.
It can be the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. You never know, you know, when that call may come.
Yeah, absolutely. And so honestly, have you ever seen an employee parking that was anywhere near the front door?
No.
No. Right. Absolutely. So we park in the back. We are, you know, we're surrounded by the dead of night. And usually if you're getting called in, it's going to be at a trauma center. And so, you know, you may not be in the best area of town, right?
No, not so, all hospitals are in the high end of town. Some of them are in, you know, places that can be sketchy at times.
Absolutely. So we thought, man, that is a great idea. And so thank you to our listener. I didn't get permission to use your name, so I won't. But thank you so much for that suggestion. And you're the reason why we're here. And so that brings us to our special guest for this podcast episode. Because I thought, oh my gosh, Stephanie and I know the perfect person for this episode, don't we?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So
yes, definitely.
Without any further hesitation, I want to introduce you all to Mr. Bill Van Sickle. He is a private investigator that has been, is an expert in his field and is the owner and operator for Van Sickle & Associates, a private investigation firm out of Texas. So Mr. Van Sickle, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Absolutely. On a second note for that, I absolutely asked you, and you absolutely had no reason but or no escape route in this. You had to say yes. Because would you like to tell our listeners how you and I know each other?
Yes, you and I have a woman that's a part of both of us, my wife.
With that being said, y'all meet my father, Bill Van Sickle.
You're my daughter. I'm sorry.
Yes. Stephanie, what have you already said three times?
Listeners, let me just say, this apple does not far fall from the tree. This is going to be entertaining. Definitely.
It totally is. So I grew up with a dad who's a criminal investigator. Gosh, Dad, you have been doing this for my entire life. And so tell us a little bit about Vansicle & Associates and your background, to include what you did before you were an investigator. So go for it.
You really want to know that?
I really, the PG version.
PG version. Let me know that all the crimes that were committed, the time limits have already passed.
Yes.
Can't control them. Basically, when I was coming out of high school, we had the Vietnam War that was a problematic, and I, for being drafted into it. But I've always wanted to be a police officer. We had a lot of my friends be firemen. I wanted to be a policeman. Well, back then we'd understood that policemen were have free kids and still eligible for food stamps. So, and then I met your mother, and she put a kibosh to the police. And of course, we just sat and waited for the draft. And luckily, President Nixon stopped the draft, and a few of my friends went, but I got to stay behind. Not that I am proud of staying behind, but you know, it was the pullout. And there were no really skirmishes at that time. So, but then I went to work and started looking in college, and that's how your mother and I met. And then I went to work for a investigation firm and as just a regular PI that I think it was called Smith something. And it was very subtle, very not just nothing really to it. And during that, we learned to get addresses, but going to post. Well, I saw my partner and I saw a deal wanted bond jumpers, $500, $1,000.
So these are these are guys that are out on bond waiting for trial, and then they bolted.
And then they failed to appear in court. Well, the bondsman has a lot of money on them, so he's willing to pay a reward for them to come in alive or hurt.
And I love that, or hurt.
So we took up a few of those, and this my friend Guy and I, and we made a lot of money quickly. Uh-huh. And had a blast. And so that was for the first 7-8 years. We did that afterwards and had a blast. Well, federal laws change in regard to capturing and like the liberal side won a little bit. So it's like asking them permission to arrest them. So, but anyway, I knew a lot of defense lawyers because it was their clients. And I opened up an investigation agency in 1981. And from that, I started doing the criminal defense investigators, where the old saying, where everybody knows, if you've been arrested, you know, that's on TV, you have the right to an appointed attorney.
Right. Well,
the attorneys have the right to go back to the court and say, I need an investigator. And so that's where I come into play.
I would think especially in like felony cases, right? Because that was a lot of your work.
All felonies. And even though misdemeanors could do it, I just don't work misdemeanors. But
no, they're too calm for you, Dad. Yeah.
It's just, you know, waste my time. But,
right.
You know, and skills and abilities. But anyway, it came interesting. Through the courts, it allowed me to be exposed to a lot of cases. And I went to a lot of schools that were put on by the state bars and things like that. And just experience is the other thing to get me where I am today. You know, yeah. It's not like I went to a specialized class on how, you know, but I learned everything from autopsies, blood stains, knife wound, gunshots, scene, reading a scene, splatters,
yeah.
All that thing. And so basically what would come up is they would hire me to to look for witnesses and read a scene.
Yeah. So I know the answer to this, but I want other people to hear your answer, because mm-hmm. I think that this is something that people will, I think it's just a natural progression in the conversation to ask this. When you are a private investigator and you are assigned criminal cases and you work for the defense, I always asked you, how does that work? Like, you're investigating, but what if they did it? Like, what, if, you know, you're not working, you aren't, and you would tell me that you're not working for the defense, you're working for the truth. And right. So just tell people, because I think that's a natural question, don't you, Stephanie?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But when they would give me an appointment in the case, they gave me all the information. Of course, they want to prove, well, this guy says he's got an alibi, or we found these witnesses. Well, basically, I reconstruct the case. I will find and talk to all the witnesses, and to get the truth of what happened at this incident. And a lot of the times, I mean, there's been, it's there. It's the witnesses finished a case about 3 weeks ago, and the police didn't interview anybody at a scene. And I found 4 witnesses that were at the scene that totally described the scene different.
Yeah,
totally. And they were like there, not cameras, but there. And so from that, we were able to get the case dismissed, and it was all because they didn't do their job. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it's the interpretation of what the witnesses are saying. And there are times I've gone and I share, and I always tell the lawyers, I'm going to find out. If it's good, then that helps you. That's fine. If it's bad, that's fine too. You now know what is so bad. Because like don't ask a question if you don't already know the answer.
That's true.
And that's
yeah.
Where defense lawyers live by that. And by reconstructing, I'd come back to them and say, this case is worse, now than when you gave it to me. Because I find more bad stuff than good, and you want me to stop, and you don't want to put me on the stand, because that's where this, in reality, that's where the scales of justice come in. In other words, the weighing of the facts and figures. Well, defense uses it. If you find something out, is it worth? Does it weigh more than the bad stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So the bad stuff over here is still, oh my God, well, you don't want to bring that in because it opens the doors to the other bad stuff. So you lose more than you really gain. And, but I live with it because I'm going after the truth. And I tell the guy, teenager, I said, I'm here for the truth. You can lie to your lawyer all day long. I don't care. You lie to me, I walk away. I'm your eyes and your ears and your legs on the ground. I'll look into it. I'll help. I'll do everything I can. But understand that I go after the truth right. And what's going to be presented. And if it hangs you, so be it.
Right. Maybe you shouldn't have done it in the first game.
Yeah. I've done like 29 death penalty cases here in Texas. And part of the process is those are some of the most gruesome, gross cases a person could get involved with. But here's the fact that I said, how do you handle that? I said, well, I go after the truth. And here's the other flip to that on the legal side. The courts have appointed you. If you don't go and do your best, then the defendant, can use that to get a new case because you failed to do a proper investigation.
I think that's a great segue into medicine. You and I have talked about this, is that mm-hmm. you are the advocate in your mm-hmm. profession, and the better you do your job, the mm-hmm. more well taken care of either the victim or, whoever has been accused and the attorneys. Like you're an advocate for justice. In the same way that we as surgical technologists are advocates for our patients, and the better we do our job and the more attention mm-hmm. to detail, not cutting corners, remaining sterile, mm-hmm. All of those things, they really, I think living with you and seeing how you were so attentive to all of those things and how doing the right thing all the time. I think you're a lot of the reason why I'm good at what I do. So thank you for that. But don't get too big of a head now, you know? So, all right. So Stephanie,
do you remember taking my autopsy reports to your school for your science projects? And the teacher and the principal calling me going, how did she get hold of this? This is so gross. I can't believe you let her get hold. I said, what you did? And you go in my file and look at stuff.
We're putting it all out there today, aren't we? Y'all are about to hear more about Chris Blevins today.
Chris Blevins, that sounds just like you, ma'am.
Oh, it sure did. Yes.
All from the school. She's got bloody picture crime scenes. And how could you let her bring that in? I said, well, it's just life, you know.
Can you imagine our dinner table conversation, Stephanie?
My mom are fantastic, and your poor mother is all I can say.
Oh no, my mother is she was an office manager for over 20 years for an OBGYN practice.
Never mind.
So yes, between that and my father's background, dinner was never boring.
That's awesome. Ever.
Yeah. Yes. So Stephanie, at this point, you're gonna have to reel us in. So I'm gonna let you start off, right? So let's talk about how do we keep each other safe and some techniques, Dad, from your experience. So Stephanie, why don't you take it away?
Well, so as you know, and as we spoke initially, when we are on call, we are walking a long distance, typically in the dark. And we don't ever know what we're going to encounter. So what are some things that you feel like that we could do when we're getting out of our vehicle into the parking lot to help keep us safe?
Well, first of all, the diligence is upon you personally to find what you're getting yourself into on a daily, nightly deal. You can't just say, okay, there's a parking lot, pull in and park. I would have prior knowledge, and that may come from who assigns you to that place, or maybe come from yourself, as to where to park and what's going on and what the hospital offers and what the hospital has out surrounding. I mean, yes, we've seen hospitals that are just, you know, like you said, you're just out in the back parking lot. You're not part of them. Anything, just an old staff and walk 100 miles and, you know, get in there. But, you know, I think it's up to you, the individual, to make aware of what they're walking into, no matter what, whether it be before they go to work, they should drive there and just kind of get an idea and a better park. And of course, there's the ideas that, you know, always kind of park as close as you can under some lights. Conditions to how you get out of the car, how you prepare yourself out of the car. I mean, those are things that, you know, you can do, and I can go into things like that, but the walking between cars while you're going to your place is a negative. You walk out plain view I guess what I'm trying to say is it's hard for me to give examples of every time because I think when you understand that my life or my skills come in after the fact. In other words, I'm there after somebody's been attacked, after somebody's had this done to them, and after the, you know, because it was done, then I go back in and reconstruct, and then I advise, well, here's your problem. Here's what you didn't do as the company or as the hospital, as the mall. And so a lot of it, I'm not asked or given the opportunity to say, you know, here's what you need to do when you set your building up, you know, to protect your employees. It's always after the fact, and there's a body on the ground or some victims in the ER.
Yeah, and that's what we want to try to help people avoid, right? Like, please don't ever have to meet, you know, you under those circumstances. Yeah. But I think a lot of the times we are, so you've seen me on call, you know, you've got a 30-minute window from the moment they call you to get into that operating room. So a lot of the times, whereas I know I had broken the rules and just parked and paid for parking later. take it out of my call pay. But I also know that sometimes we're in such a hurry that, you know, we don't take our personal belongings. I know that many of the times we should have an escort, right? If so, you could have security walk you to your car after, or walk you, you know, from the car in. But we don't always, our safety, I don't think is typically the first thing we're thinking about. We're already thinking about our case, our patient, what comes next, you know? So you've already said, like, try to park under a light. Don't walk in between cars. Like, try to walk smack in the middle of the roadway or on the sidewalk. Make yourself noticeable, right? You've also talked to me, though, about how I carry myself when I walk. Right. So tell them what you told me, as you know, how should we carry ourselves when we are in a place where we might be vulnerable?
Well, the main thing is confidence in how you carry yourself. At the same time, when you prepare yourself to get out of the car, I think you should do everything you can with the car locked, like your purse or your back go bag, I think is what you might call it. And when you turn the car off, you know, I actually would have told you to place your best key. You know, everything's keyless now, but if you had a key like to the door, you would put it in between the two fingers and hold it in your palm. Just as someone can see it, and that gives you a little strength to hold that your hands can fly. But it's, the preparedness of you is going to have to be repetition to make it where your go bag and everything's real quick, you know? So there are other things to do and to prepare yourself. And I've got a couple of ideas on, I would, when it's time, I'll run that by you.
Well, then that brings us to, you know, let's say that I am by myself and somebody does approach me. What are some suggestions you may have of how to react in that situation?
Well, the first thing is, someone is approaching you, you don't stop. You just continue to your goal. And it's those that stop that are going to have, you're going to now have a confrontation or a meeting. If you continue your walk and your stance and don't give them the time of day, then you're better off. Okay.
And you're closing criminals. The distance, right? Like,
yeah.
To the hospital. Yeah.
Criminals don't like, well, yesterday's criminals don't like confrontation immediately. Then they'll start sizing up the deal where they're walking away. Well, what's now? What am I looking at? Where is she compared to everything else that was around her? And they may see something that disturbs them.
Yeah.
Here, a criminal is, well, they're, besides being extreme idiots, sometimes are geniuses, you know, but you know, that's when they become a genius, when they're in prison. But I'll have to tell you about that. But anyway, I have found through all the cases that the best defense that a person can carry is sound.
Ah,
okay,
that's good.
Too many.
How many car alarms, though, Dad, do we hear and don't ever?
I'm not talking about a car alarm.
Yeah.
However, I do have a story.
I bet you do. Yeah.
There was a video that was sent to me, and it was called a new alarm for carjacking. If you're being carjacked, and it goes, a car is coming down the street, and a car pulls in front of it like they do, and three guys get out and they're about to approach your car. Well, this person had a horn and it hits the horn of their car. And the sound is nothing but dogs barking. And then about 30 seconds after the dog, of course, the barking, the guys stop running and hear the dogs that were possibly in the car. And then after the dogs bark, it hear gunshots. Bam, 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 bam. And the guys take off running, leave their car and haul and go. And run.
Yeah.
And then the driver puts it back in drive and goes around their car, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's basically, you're using psychology.
Right.
Because it's like another one, like, why would a, how did a burglar know that this house didn't have, you know, is easier to hit than this one next to it? It's got a heck of a lot more stuff. Well, they'll go around and see who's got alarms. And so let's don't worry about that one. Let's pick the one right here who's got nothing, no sign.
Who's the easier target?
Easier target and not an possible risk is lower. But yeah. Even though it's just a sign, I've had cases where the guy's burglarized so many times, he didn't want to have the money to put in the system. So I bought him signs.
Like an ADT sign, stick it on there.
Yeah, you know, security, you know, and all that around his perimeter. Fake camera, a $25 fake camera. Never had a burglary after that.
Really? Yeah. Just because the perception is that get caught, right?
Right. And why do I need that?
Yeah.
But the other thing that gripes me about some of this hospitals and some of the other even hospitals probably in malls is that technology is too much, in my opinion. The physical and human presence is what does it. And when I've worked where a woman was hurt very badly at a mall, loading her grocery, I mean, stuff in there. And we went after the mall, and they had plenty of officers. They're inside the mall,
like in the monitor room.
Right. Yeah, monitor room and walking the hallways of the mall. That's fine. But the problem has always been with the people and the security outside. They're not in the parking lot. They're not in the and they have, well, I have cameras out there, but who's really watching a camera? How long are you going to respond from when you see something on a camera to you go out and help that person?
Right. Yeah. Like, what's the distance to even get to them when they need you?
They're going to get hurt, done already. You might get a good picture of the idiot that did it, but so what? You got a person hurt.
Yeah.
We're seeing now, even when we had it down here, the big grocery store in Cedar Hill happened a week ago. And they now have put up police towers, manned police towers, and they're shaded in, and you don't know if there's a policeman in there or not, but it's like a scaffold that goes up and way above the car, so their vision is just all over, but it's not a place for humans to be in.
Right. And in the middle of it, so if something does happen,
so nobody knows, is there somebody watching me, and he's got it. You know, the capabilities of responding immediately.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the kind of security. And I'd love to see that at hospitals and somebody driving around. I think I did see one time where they actually had their security car and they're in every parking lot, just driving back and forth and around every parking lot. And that is secure for the patients or for the employees and stuff. So.
Absolutely. That's what
technology is is the worst.
Well, I think that leaves us in a great place to kind of take a pause because, you know, next we're going to talk about like situational awareness. And then also, you know, we can be at risk once we're in the hospital and we enter those doors as well. So, yeah. So everybody hold on. We are going to be right back. Go get a drink and come back because the stories are flowing the next half, I promise. We'll be back.
All right, guys, we're back from that quick break. And as we were discussing before we broke away for a minute, we were talking about walking into the building, you know, walking from our cars to the parking lot, through the parking lot to the building. And one of the things that is a pet peeve of mine, and I know of Chris, people that are on their cell phones, looking down, not paying attention. And so, what we want to get into now is, Dad, are there any devices or any apps on phones that we could use as protection?
Right, since they're on their damn phone anyway.
Since they're there anyway. Yeah.
Of course there is. Everybody's got their old panic button and got their panic button with their, but a better one is the panic button, of course, on your car. And if you've got your keys in your hand that fob, that is a good one. But one that you can't always walk around, even in, say, you going close to the building, someone approaches you. Well, what I believe they're finding out and you're seeing more of is your alarm to say you're in danger is sound. Yeah. And they now have produced what we would call like a keychain alarm that is not necessarily, it doesn't attach just not to your keys, but it'll attach to your clothing. And what it is basically it's a, like a hoop with a like a fob thing below it. And all you do to activate it is pull it and drop it.
Like a grenade.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it just pulls and it's everywhere on your clothes, but it's hard. And when you pull it, once you pull it, the decibels of a siren are just phenomenal. And that is going to scare or chase anyone away because that is immediately drawing attention. And it's not like a, sometimes like a car horn going off when you hear. This is a siren that, and the way you cut and you pull it off, you don't necessarily hold it in your hand. You can even pull it off, let it drop on the ground while you're running or walking to get away.
Oh, that's,
you know? And that stays with you. They're very inexpensive, but yet they match your clothing and it's a part of your clothing. So
do you know what's the name of it?
Sound is what is probably the best psychological weapon to have than you personally approaching and your words and your scream, you know, that doesn't get out. What happens is you take that, pull it, drop it, and continue going on or at a better pace or trot.
Yeah.
They're having to deal with that sound, and that sound does not stop.
What's the name of the product?
It does not stop until it's reconnected to the fob. And of course, if you had a situation, you know, everybody's going to come around. They're going to hear it. Even your security and their so-called cameras and mics or stuff, they're going to be blasted. And they're going to come, then you can get it, and then you reconnect it.
Or don't.
Right, or don't. You know, they're not that, you know, but it matches your, you buy them in the same color as your scrubs.
Yeah, what's the name of it, Dad? What's the name of the company? Like, what's the name of it?
There was a couple of them. There's one that's called the Hootie Personal Keychain Alarm for women and kids, men, women, and kids. It's a handheld safety device and defense. It even has some of these have a panic strobe light that goes with the sound. And they come in different colors and things like that. And because that's what I was looking for was can be held, because you can't carry a gun, you know, it's a mace. You got to be within 10 feet and the potentials of it blowing back on you are great. Plus you got to approach, you know, and everybody thinks, well, I can carry, you know, all this stuff. Well, no. This is so simple. You don't even know it's there.
Well, and here's the thing is that I remember, like, number one, if you're on call and you're hauling it into a ship, you don't have time to get all of that stuff. And also I remember when I was younger and you gave me mace. First of all, I thought, I am so damn klutzy that I'm going to spray my own self. And then I thought, everything goes to the bottom of your purse. And so what am I going to do? And be like, oh, I'm sorry, please don't attack. Hold on 1 minute.
Can you hold on just a second?
Dig and then in the bottom.
Try to attack me. Yeah.
Right? Because I wasn't going to leave it on my keychain because I would have sprayed myself. Right. And then now nobody has a keychain because everything's touchless. So I love that. We're going to put that product on.
There's another one called FOSMON, Fossman Personal Alarm for Women and Self-Defense and Strobe Light. And it's a deal. Your Caballero that just kind of touches to any part of your uniform.
Sweet.
Okay. And that could be the first thing you go to, you know, like in the phone. And then trust me, that person's not going to stay around. I don't care how crazy he is. And if you go inside, people are going to react and go to the scene themselves. You don't go back and get it.
Well, and two, the other benefit to that is, even if we do have car alarms, you know, as we said earlier, we're walking a long distance to the hospital. They're only going to stretch so far, for one. Mm-hmm. And two, if it's away from you, people are not going to notice what's going on that far away from the vehicle. And so having something that's going to be on you mm-hmm. is going to be more beneficial than having those car alarms.
Right. And this is an irritable siren sound.
Right.
Okay. This is not a car. How many car horns going off and everybody walks by and goes, well, some stupid set his alarm off.
Who,
you know,
exactly.
Right. Who's doing that? You can even go outside and look. No, it's just a car alarm, you know? So these are coming out. And like I said, that Fossman pretty personal alarm was good. Mm-hmm. And they were like two of them for $15. So,
cheap.
And so I'm telling you, in my 40 years experience, is that knowing and talking to multiple defendants, not victims, because victims are badly hurt or dead, is that they are just, it was the situation around them, they just picked randomly and it fell into place. They were vulnerable looking. They were digging around in their car. They weren't ready to get out, but are out halfway in their purse and put their purse on top of the car, get the rest of their stuff ready, go bag. And then they were just a prime opportunity to get behind them, shove them in the car, get in the car and haul ass with them, and they're dead.
Right.
You know,
Well, so Dad, I think that's a really great segue into the next kind of question, because, okay, you've gotten us through from, you know, parking and BFE to getting into the hospital, but now we're not always safe even then. We work in these huge institutions. We as employees always come in the back most of the time, which means that we're coming through the emergency room. We still have to have that kind of situational awareness. That's a term you've used to me throughout my life. What does that mean to you, Dad? Like, what is being aware of your surroundings? And how can we do that to keep ourselves safe?
Well, when you're inside, situational around awareness is just walking. It's like defensive driving. Okay, wow. When you drive your car, you're aware of everything going around. You come near an intersection, you're looking, you're visually, subconsciously looking left, right, straight ahead, anybody crossing the road. I mean, that's where you get into your situational, is when it's like driving. You're going to take a while to get to that. And so when you're in the hospital, things I've seen and have been a part of is that when somebody is approaching you that's manic, that your positioning, how you, your looks, your if you're scared, you're just giving them and you're empowering them to get it. I know that there's a lot of nurses that I think and aides that can just beat the heck out of you if you look at them wrong, you know, but.
Trust me, there are a lot of scrubs that can do that too.
Yeah.
Ask our
friends. Yeah, I'm sure. I laid on the table looking at them, a few of them. But, you know, the wonder where they're about to put that tube.
We'll put you to sleep and then we'll put the tube in, Dad.
Had to make sure they weren't using the same tube for both ends.
Oh.
Which one went first?
I've talked to you about this. You go up before you go down, Dad. As long as they're doing that, up before you go down, then we're fine. Yeah.
No, I'd rather go down the throat than up the butt.
We mean the upper part of the body first, Dad.
I thought you meant the butt or the throat. Sorry about that.
For all of you who are listening, my father's nickname is Dr. Google, because my years of experience although he is an expert in his career, sometimes he will double check the hell out of me as being the expert in my career. So dad's name and nickname, especially to my students, is Dr. Google. So
Dr.
But
Google.
Anyway, we're squirming. This is why Stephanie can
control us. Yes, I got you. So dad, we're in the building, right?
Yeah.
And we're walking down the hallway. What can we do? Because like Chris said, we come in the back door, we come through the ER. At the hospital I worked at, we would walk right by the morgue, which was totally unnerving at times.
You don't have to worry about them, they're dead.
I don't like that. That's not my thing. I like my patients breathing. Thank you. But what can we do in those situations to help ensure our safety? Because they're remote areas that there may not be a whole lot of people there.
Right. I believe in if confronted to face the individual and with no fear. Saying it, putting your hand up, talk to the hand, not my department, you know, that crap. All that does is irritate a manic person more. But if you turn and hear somebody and look them in the eyes with a stern face and listen to their rant, that rant is going to be gone after they're through with no confrontation. I'm in my years and probably I'd say 80% of the time, because sometimes they just want to be able to say something and somebody look them in the eye and listen. You don't have an answer, you know, or if you'll stay right here, I'm going to go get you a help. And then you go get them either a doctor or a policeman, or both. But if you walk away, turn your back on them, you're inviting them to continue their approach. Mm-hmm. But if you turn and face them and it's like they stop because they're startled, they're knowing they'd rather have you leave and continue walking away, and again, it fuels them and it continues them to chase after you.
But you're vulnerable, right?
Right. And they like going after scared people and like a bully. And but if you turn around and face them, can I help you? They start to say, okay, can you slow your speech down? Not calm down as much as slow your speech down.
Oh, you can ask my husband. Calm down will round me up in about 2 seconds.
Yeah. Everybody, yep. calm down on you. So it's just a matter of term. And I'd rather in my situations with people I'm interviewing in the confrontation is I just need you to slow your words down. It's hard for me to hear with doing too much fast. So, but I don't take my eyes off of you know, I don't, even when I'm walking away from them, it seems settled. I don't take my eyes off of them. I walk sideways or backwards until I'm free of the area or within others that they've settled and situated in. And, you know, I know they're on a table, it's a little bit different story, you know, but if they're on a table or, you know, you're going to have other people there to help you talk to them. But sometimes I had the best, I've had a few surgeries, you know. Just a few. And
you and Stephanie are both like the bionic man and woman. You guys are awesome.
Plus, I need you to give me back part of my body so I can make my chime with it. But anyway, the best communication I ever had was somebody actually leaning over me and looking at my eyes and with a smile and just saying, okay, here's what's going to happen next. Because they know I can, you know, it put me in the worst part of whatever, of a town.
Dallas, Texas. Yes.
Without a gun. And I'm better off than sitting laying on a table waiting for surgery. You know,
we know. That's why we're drunk.
Well, that's true. But, you know, me and drugs had so many. I throw a cliff. So it's but it's the calming effect that the person looking at you.
Right.
Was calm.
Yeah.
And didn't tell me would you just be still? We can't do it, you know, arguing with me.
Right.
And it was just a matter of leaning over and just, okay, Bill, you know, you're fine. What do you want to say? Okay. You know, and it's the calmness of that individual deflates everything.
Well, so Stephanie, you want to hear a story?
Yeah, I would love to hear a story.
Let's hear a story. Okay, Dad, you get to talk about this after I tell my version of it. So my father had one of his many surgeries. My mother was working, and I was in charge of taking care of my father. And my dad says to me, and mind you, strict instructions from my mother, do not take your father anywhere. Don't do it. Tell him he has to stay home, drink water, take his meds. You know, so I'm under mom, I'm under Martha Van Sickle rules.
Right.
And yet.
Shout out to mom.
Shout out to my mother. She's a saint for putting up with all of us. But so my dad then tells me, look, Christy is what I was called. I just need to serve this one paper. It's time sensitive. The attorney needs it right now. Like, I have to do this. I promise. I'm just taking it to the door. I just need you to drive me to this house.
And how old were you?
I was in my 20s, early 20s. Okay. Not a okay. mom. Like, so, like, at least younger than 26 when I had my oldest.
Right.
And so I'm like, Dad, mom said, well, that never worked. So this man here convinces me to drive him to this place. This place wasn't 15 minutes, but it was like 45 minute drive. And I pull in and I stay in the car, and here's my bandaged father walking to the door. No one answers. And then all of a sudden there's a truck and this huge long sedan, and they block us in. And I see these guys get out and they have weapons. And here is my father at the front door. And I am in the car, like, freaking out, because I think that, number one, we're all about to be shot. And number two, my mother is going to lose her mind because I just did what she told me not to do. And so I am upset. Like, I am literally in the car looking for my father's weapon, who it happened to be on him, right? Because I'm thinking, like, this is like World War III, or now the imagery that now comes to my head is The Walking Dead. We're like, you know, people have weapons all over the place. You're just going to walk around and like, all. Of course, Walking Dead wasn't there. But now when I watch that, I'm like, I've been there, done that. Like, yeah, it was some dude in wherever the hell we were. So that I 20, like 22, maybe. And I'm watching my father surrounded by people that we don't know, that have weapons pointed at him. I'm inside peeing my pants, and my dad, who just had surgery, completely handles it like nobody's business. And in fact, the guy, they put their weapons down. They take my father to go find his wife at Walmart so that he can also give her the papers without, you know, her drawing whatever weapon. And I literally watched my father have three weapons pointed at him with his oldest daughter in the car, and never for a moment lost his cool. Not at all. How the hell do you do that? How does that happen?
Please. I can't answer that.
How do you do that? So how'd you do that, Bill?
Bill?
Yes,
Bill. Bill William?
Bill William.
Well, you know, what about situational awareness is going into a situation is, you know, do you have an option? You have an option to go in hard, or you have an option to go in soft. And what you bring to the party, as they say, is another saying. When I was there, yes, I was armed, and I was not affected by that. I could not, what do you call it?
You just had surgery.
That I could not take care of them. You know, I might've got a few off, but if I go off on that, or if I immediately grab mine, it would have just escalated.
Right.
And what they wanted was just information with guns pointed at me. And so I gave them the information, and I says, it's going to lend to this. And, you know, it says, if it is, somebody better start go ahead and call an ambulance, because there's a bunch of us going to go to the hospital, and I'm not going to be alone, you know, and, or we can handle it, but just, this is something that's part of life. Let me do what I need to do. And your wife gets the other one. You can go with me, and, you know, And they just kind of calmed it down because I explained in a calm manner what I was about to do. They knew I was armed too, but I didn't go and put my hand on it, or, you know, I didn't escalate it.
Right.
You know, but I just convinced them that it was, they're taking it too far. And they listened to me. I took my eyes. I never looked down on the ground. I looked them all in the eyes and said, now it's your decision. What do y'all want to do? And they agreed, put their weapons down, took me over to see his wife at the Walmart. I think one of them, didn't they come over and ask you, try to ask you out?
Yeah, yes. I didn't tell that part.
You didn't tell that part of the story, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got a hot date out of this.
Are you kidding me? He's got a foot up his rear. No. You just pointed a weapon at me and my father, and now you want to go out for pizza and a beer?
Oh, like, gosh.
Are you don't even know. Well, y'all are. I told you today's episode was going to be fun. But yeah. No, that is not the way to ask me out on a date.
But yeah, and then awesome. She got chewed out. But then she got chewed out by her mom as soon as we got home.
So. You know what happened? He says to me in the car, "Don't tell your mother."
Your mom.
And I'm like, already I'm not telling mom
where you're at.
I said, "I'm not telling my mom. No, this is staying between us." He gets home. Mom comes home from work. Oh, Martha, you'll never believe what happened today. He rats us out, and my mother is doing the mom look. Which, by the way, tomorrow is Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all of you and your mom.
Yes, definitely.
Totally, I was killed and revived like but five now wait. Times with the look.
All right, hold on. Wait, I have a question.
Oh, no.
Bill just had surgery, right?
Uh-huh.
So his excuse for ratting you out was that he was on drugs, right?
Oh, yeah, probably. No.
Okay, so there you go.
I wanted to see her reaction.
The next day, he didn't even know it had happened.
I wanted to see her reaction. I don't care. It was fun.
He loves poking at my mother, and that was why he did.
Listen, I've met your kids, and they adore him.
Yes.
I know what happened. I knew he was getting it just for her reaction. I mean, I knew.
Oh, my gosh.
That's great. That
so,
is
Stephanie,
great.
Why don't you talk about, like, the next kind of segue, right? So, we've already learned, like, be, just to kind of just summarize, like,
yeah,
always be aware of the things that are around you, but also running away isn't necessarily the right thing because it's appearing vulnerable, right?
Especially if you have on heels. You know, yeah. How it happens in every horror movie is that they have heels and then they trip and turn their ankle and then they can't run. We all know how that goes.
This
don't
is why
run
we're in medicine. This is why we're yeah. having scrubs and
exactly. Exactly.
Absolutely.
You know, and you asked me about that. Remember, you still have that alarm, that siren connected to your gown. And
right.
It's thin. It's not like a phone in your pocket.
Right.
And
right.
If it ever in a situation in the hospital gets to where it's hands-on kind of a deal by the individual to you, pull that little deal and drop it. I guarantee you. That
they're gonna run.
They're running, and you'll have help in within seconds.
Right,
right.
So it can still be used, whether inside or out. And you know, it's the perfect, my opinion, a 90% effective mm-hmm. personal protection to
right.
have.
Right,
that's great.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, I completely agree.
Well, now, you know, our patients are asleep typically, and we don't always have the best patients there, especially if you're in some of the bigger trauma centers and things like that. You could have police officers sitting there. You could have them outside the door, or you could just have a person who, when they wake up from anesthesia, reacts aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you handle that situation when they're on the table, and how do we address that?
Because I think you have dealt with a lot of patients who are, or criminals who have mental illness.
I have.
Yeah. And so I think dealing with someone who is not thinking clearly, like you or I would be.
Right. Well, and the problem is they're, you know, they've been on, you know, they've been asleep. They've been on drugs. They're on drugs. They're, a lot of times they don't even have control of their own faculties. They don't really even know what's going on. And, you know, we don't want to hurt them. So what can we do in that situation? Because we can't let them come off that bed.
Right.
Because if we do, they're going to hurt themselves.
Yeah.
What I would any my suggestion is the same thing that happened, not happened to me, but it's the fact that someone that you're there, you're calm and you're looking them in the eyes and trying to relate to them what their issue is and not telling them what their issue is. Some of them just, I'm scared. Okay. Quite reason, you know. And the second thing is it doesn't hurt to always have your, there's, I'm sure they, there's something y'all say to get an extra personnel into the room.
Right.
That's there. That should be said immediately, but it's a maintaining, it's your posturing, your actions is what's going to either de-escalate it or escalate it.
Right.
You're ignoring it. You're doing this is going to escalate. You right. confronting it with your strength of your words and sound gives reassurance even to the manic.
I also think, Dad, that's really great because we deal, you know, it takes a team in the operating room to take care of our patients. And so sometimes we get into very adrenaline filled, tense moments, especially if our patient's not doing well. And so we have moments where the surgeon or the assist and or even the RN, we may be a bit confrontational to one another. Or it may be a tense moment where we don't agree on what's about to happen to the patient. And so these tips, I think, can help not just for us handling our patient, but also for handling each other in that situation, because it's called patient abandonment. We can't just be like, you're getting on my last nerve. I'm going to take 5 minutes. I'm going to walk away. And then you and I can talk about it later. Like, you can't do that.
We can't do that. No.
Yeah. You can't leave. You can't separate yourself. You know, if somebody's dry humping your last nerve, like, you have to stand there and take it. So
right.
I think these things can help for us to handle each other as well. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a matter of your posturing. If you got to keep aware of how you're posturing yourself when you react. I mean, right. out what your facial thing is, a plain, you know, like put your hand down and just go, you know, okay.
Yeah.
Neutral.
My then, face always says it all. You can't control that.
You know,
it gets me in more trouble.
Don't start laughing. And you don't laugh. What? You idiot.
Boy, we would be in trouble, Chris.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just posturing. And in my investigative world, it's 100% posturing and going into a case, if I'm going to go in soft and hard, I mean, all those things are thought of and are changed, you know, where I need to go in soft and then it goes hard because of personal protection.
Right.
So. But it's being able to make read the table, read the scene. Y'all can read the table. You know what's about to come on, and you've got prior experience of what people do coming out of certain things.
Right.
That they went in scared as hell, mm-hmm. and they come out, what? Scared as hell.
Oh, yeah.
They don't, that part doesn't go away.
Yeah.
You know, so it's... it's the same thing, whether you're in walking, securing, you know, or looking or in the hospital, you know, it's, if he went to sleep because the doctor said finally put his ass to sleep because, you know, he's screaming and then, you know, hitting with the adamant and stuff. And I'm not talking about personal experience. I mm-hmm. cry. No. you wake up, I guarantee you that person's going to wake up the same way. You're not going to wake up for it. That was fun.
Right.
They'll be finishing the prayer that they started before you put them up.
Right.
Or the joke. Or the joke. That's my favorite.
I had that happen.
Yes. Yep. When they start to tell a joke and anesthesia screws it up because they push the med too fast.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, I didn't even get the punchline. And you'll listen and they'll continue to tell the joke and the punchline when they come up. It's
when they wake awesome. Up. Yep.
That's a good day. Yeah.
Drain them off that fluid a little bit slower so we could hear the words.
Exactly. Look at anesthesia, like, come on, man. But yeah. So I will tell you that, I mean, Stephanie, dad, his career, you know, just like surgery doesn't happen between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. You know, my father's career was not a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday job. So I was quite used to, you know, late at night leaving or coming home in the middle of the night, or there were, you know, that I think we were never a very regular family dynamic when it came to that growing up. But I think that one of the things I want to ask about is that fatigue definitely sets in. So like when you work those off shifts, when you're having, you've already been like, we work a 10-hour shift and then get called in, you're exhausted. And I think that, you know, as somebody who constantly deals with like off schedule job requirements, how do you maintain that situational awareness, that sense of, you know, protection, even when you're exhausted? Any clues? I mean, I know we all have, we just have IVs of caffeine coming through us all the time, but I don't know, any tips of the trade, Dad, for when that happens? Like when you're dead tired and you're walking back to your car, what if it's still in the dead of night?
Well, you know, it's the same thing. You never turn it off until you're in a safe place. Your situational awareness, your hardness, your softness, you walk with that authority to where you're safe, whether it be inside your car locked. And the same thing goes with me. I go into, I've gone through, finished the situation and get in the car, and then I might drive a half a block away or a block, turn the corner and stop and take, you know, just go, okay, evaluate this, you know, you know, and reload my gun. No. and then, you know, it's just a matter of just that you have the ability that you need to de-escalate, because you don't want to take what was taken from that to the next person.
Right.
And there's times I'm interviewing witness after witness. I have to drive here. I go there. And I actually don't have the time to change in my situation or my awareness. And so but you got to take a second break, a deep breath. And I know there are places for y'all. Y'all got to find these places in your building where you can just, when you're leaving, you just stop for a few minutes and collect yourself. And because you want to leave what's at the hospital at the hospital.
It's true.
And, you know, you want to be, but you want to go back in the mood. I want to get back to, okay, I'm aware. I'm about to go back. Okay. And just, you know, put yourself back. How am I, you know, I'm okay. Oh, you know, I'll see people wearing these things that they actually pat it and go, okay, it's there. Your alarm, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
It's just, I don't sell these things that I'm promoting. I don't get paid by anybody, but I just know criminals.
Right.
And they also are deal on situations and vulnerability. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you remove all that. So that's what I'm saying. Find a place, catch your breath. What's my next step? Okay. And then go. And then it becomes, once you do that, you're going to find yourself walking in a hallway and stopping by a window, looking out, and then just putting your thoughts together. And then you take it, anybody, oh, you okay? I'm super.
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful landscape, you know? And, you know, not get the hell away from me, you know?
Yeah.
You know? Don't touch me. But...
we say that too.
So, we say that a lot.
Oh God, yeah. And so it's just a matter of, you've got to, in your awareness and in your routine, I guess that's what a routine, that this is always part of my routine to gather.
Yeah.
I gather, whether it's in a car, walking down a hallway, away from the area I'm at, and I collect myself.
Just okay? compartmentalizing.
Yeah. And just say, this part's done and this part. And it also gives me a chance to say, well, did I cover everything I needed to cover?
Yeah.
And I'm not looking through notes. I'm looking through my mind and my what I remember and hear. Same thing for you guys. I mean, was everything done that I should have done?
Right.
That might be quick. Yeah, good. Then we're all right.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, especially when we freak out, you know, the thing, but did you die?
Or but did you kill die?
Someone?
Right. And that's what we tell our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Bill, you've had a lot of years of dealing with criminals and, you know, trying to find the truth. Mm-hmm. So if you had one fantastic story to tell that you're allowed to tell, tell us what that would be.
Oh, my God. Stephanie, it's hard to say. I think if you look at my situation of the defense, that my cases are always after the fact.
Right.
Okay. I'm dealing with crime scenes. I'm dealing with the homicides, the murder, the destruction of a family or destruction of a person and
right.
a business and stuff. So some of the stories I can load you up, but they're not always that end in a good point. I mean, we caught a defendant guy that actually took a woman and from a theater parking lot, and and he took her over to his mother's grave, had his time with her, killed her, and then left. And that's how they convicted him, was because he was over his mother's grave. You know.
Wow.
All I'm saying is, was there something I could do ahead of time? That's not my positioning. But what happens is people will then, like, I didn't work that kind of a case. They're going to sue the company or the place, the family. And they're going to come out and say, you know, hey, this is wrong. Something didn't go right. And I'll find out what didn't go right that they didn't do, they didn't have. And then you hopefully think that bringing this to the attention of the corporation or any will make the changes necessary to protect its participants and its things like that. So I wish I could tell you a lot of stories, but they're all I'd say 90% of them are all just
bad.
I'm at the end and I don't want to be there. I don't want that, but I don't want to, I'm not going to be a cop either.
Right. Well, I have one more question we haven't discussed this in advance. Tell me your best Chris story ever.
Stephanie Austin. Yes.
Come on, Bill. Tell me a good one.
Well, the best one, one of the best ones, when she was 15, 16, and we get all of a sudden we have a lady come to our door, and a lady comes to our door and goes, Mr. Van Sickle? I said, yes. She goes, I can't forget the guy's name, say Adams. I'm Adams' mother. And I said, yeah. And Christy and him are went on a date or something. And I said, yes. And well, they're stuck behind the fence gate at the park
because
the Rangers closed the park.
This is the story.
She wanted me to go over and talk to you because she knew that if I found out when the police called me, that I would be very unhappy. And I just want you to know that they are very safe. He didn't do anything, convincing me that I'm not going to rip this boy's head off. And I drive out there. I get the police to meet me out there. And we unlock the gate. And this boy is standing about 2,000
yards from me.
Yeah, scared. And just, you know, and he unlocks the gate. I said, well, you drive your car through. And I'm just giving him this look that, you know, it's just shooting bullets. But the guy sent his mother to my house to talk to me prior to all this, to thinking that would relieve my.
Well, he didn't want to die. I would have done the same thing.
You know.
Okay, can I at least give. I didn't want to go on a date with this kid, but It wasn't anyway. I went on it, but he took me to this state park thinking it would be romantic. And they lock the doors gates.
Yeah.
Because they are closed.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I saw that gate locked, I went, oh no, it was bad. I tell people I went on a lot of first dates, not a lot of seconds. Because this man, if we're gonna talk about my dating life, this man, Bill Bansicle, would open the door when I was being picked up for a date, and he would have his shoulder holster, like with the gun in it, out in the open. He would open the door just enough for that, and he would say driver's license. That was it. So they would have to take their driver's license and slip it through the crack in the door because he wouldn't open it all the way. And the man would take his driver's license and slam the door in this kid's face and go upstairs and run him.
Because, awesome. Oh, yeah,
because I was like thuggish, ruggish, right? And dating a lot of...
Right, yeah.
No.
I can see that.
Oh, right? Yeah. That's another podcast. So then he'd run him, and he'd come down, and he'd say, like, you need to be home at midnight. And they're like, yes, sir. Sir,
sandwich. And you were home at 11:30, right?
I was home. It would be 10:30. We'd be 15 minutes from my house, and they'd be like, whoo, man, I guess we should probably head back, huh? I mean, it's getting late. Like, I was never late for curfew because all of the doofuses that I dated were scared to death of my father.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, wow. Thanks, Stephanie. Anything
you're,
else
you're
you
welcome,
like to share?
Chris. And all of you wonderful people that are listening to our podcast, you are welcome for that one.
Yeah.
And Bill, I personally want to thank you for joining us today because this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. May I say one thing to end?
You can say whatever you want.
As if you
roll
ever
tide, roll.
Oh my gosh. Oh, roll, I let that happen. Roll. I just let that happen. See, roll his tide. Dog don't even like it. Oh that's, my gosh.
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh man. Well, y'all.
Whoa.
And there's my, okay.
Oh.
There, so guys, with that, I think we're done for this particular podcast.
And okay, go balls.
All right, and go balls. Oh, my Lord. So the whole point is in this entire podcast, and from all three of us, is that please protect yourself, stay safe, be aware of your surroundings, whether you're in the parking lot or going to the hospital, even when you're in the OR, because if you aren't safe, if you haven't protected yourself, you can't care for your patients. So do what you need to do. Thank you for everything that you all do as CSTs. Thank you, Mr. Bill Bansicle, for being with us. And Stephanie Austin, you and I will talk later.
Yes, ma'am.
With that, please check out the webpage for information on not only Bansicle and Associates and how you can contact them if, God forbid, you need his services, but also on the products that we mentioned. I can definitely keep you safe as well.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Scrub Life podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and share. We can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at the Scrub Life podcast. Show notes for this episode, as well as past episodes, our contact information, and the virtual suggestion box can be found at our webpage, thescrublifepodcast.com. This has been Chris Blevins and Stephanie Austin with the Scrub Life Podcast. Until next time, be safe, support each other, and stay sterile.